Kevin Kisner wins the WGC match play. Major season is right around the corner, and Matt Kuchar and Sergio Garcia continue their tour of nonsense in 2019. Welcome to episode 8 of the Flagstick.com T-Talk podcast. My name is Stefan Tiedorf. Sitting across from me in studio is the associate publisher of Flagstick.com and a PGA of Canada professional. Most importantly, my co-host, Scotty McLeod. How are you, buddy?
I'd be better if I had a better coffee. How's that?
Hey, you know, when you come out to Amherst, you get what you get.
Gas station coffee, right?
It's always, you know, it's a good coffee when you have to pour it yourself.
Yeah, they don't make it any cheaper that way, but hey, whatever. I'll get through it.
Hey, man. It's Amherst. And across from me on my left, we have our T-Talk producer, Nick Gallinger. How are you, buddy?
I am great. I didn't get sick from Stefan last week, so I'm feeling good.
Guys, I've healed up. The amount of alcohol probably in my system last week, I just probably killed it.
You're not covered in a blanket this week, so that's a positive.
It's still here, just an emergency in case anything comes over me. You never know. I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys.
You were a trooper, though. You got through it all.
I was fighting through it.
Didn't look good.
I didn't look good. Like, you guys left last week, and I immediately had, like, the hottest bath of my life. I felt like I was 8 years old again. Like,
get some nice suds in there.
Nice suds. Lit a candle just for...
Terrible.
All right.
Too much information. Let's get some golf.
All right. Well, yeah, let's hop back into some golf. As I mentioned off the top, Kevin Kisner won the WGC match play, his third PGA Tour win. Scotty, how much of the match play did you get to watch this weekend?
A fair bit. I was kind of in and out. Caught some replays of some of the matches later at night. But yeah, watching Kiz play match play again and get in that final, like he had been the year before. You know, his game was great. Unfortunately, the weather was pretty bad the last day. I don't know if you saw him and Cooch fighting it out. It was a little different conditions, that's for sure.
Yeah, it didn't look great out there. Nice to see Kiz get the win. Unfortunately, I don't think too many people were cheering for Matt Kuchar this week. And do you want to get into that whole thing with him and Sergio now?
Why don't we leave that for a bit? Why don't we give Kisner a few more kudos first?
I like that because I love Kisner. This guy's just an everyday, he's a guy's guy.
I think the funniest thing that he said, you know, he had a great press conference afterwards and, you know, he said, I'm a grinder. That's it, you know, and that's him.
For match play.
And I can recall hearing great things about him. Matt McQuillan from Kingston here actually played with him at University of Georgia 2003. Kiz was a rookie there, and Matt had went there for a year after he was at Oklahoma State, and they were good friends. And he talked about what his game was like back then, and you know, you never knew how it was going to translate to the pro tour. But you know, he's made quite a career for a guy who, you know, he's a good iron striker, but he doesn't hit it the longest. But, you know, as you said, he's a grinder, so he makes it happen, right?
No, I said third PGA Tour win. It's obviously his biggest one, being a WGC. You hit the nail on the head there. He does not hit it long. He's roughly around 150th on average for distance every year on the tour. But he's so honest, and that's what kills me about Kisner. And I have this great quote. So he was on Foreplay, one of the golf podcasts through Barstool, and they asked him about his chances at the majors this year. And coming off this week, every time somebody wins, that's where everyone goes, is what are their chances
sure,
at
of course.
Major.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to read you this quote. So they asked him about his chances at the majors this year, and here's what he said. He said, Augusta is always going to be brutal for me with how long they make the golf course. I played it a few weeks ago. They changed the number 5 to 495 yards, so that's another bogey for me. PGA Championship at Bethpage Black, got no chance there. Pebble, I could play decent if the USGA wasn't running it. And that just leaves the British Open at Royal Portrush. And he said, I've got no idea about Ireland.
Well, I'll give him a shot at Ireland as long as the golf course firms
probably
up.
Probably never even seen the golf course.
No. But I mean, if the course firms up, and he said he loved the course this week because the ball was running. And he talked about that. That gives him a chance. You know, that gives him a chance. He can hit it down the middle. And if it's going to run off the golf course for guys that are hitting it longer and they get wild, then it gives him a chance. He can hit it long enough to take advantage of the golf course. So, what can he do in a major? I guess. I mean, that's a pretty fair assessment, right? No better assessment than his own.
He's gonna know. One guy I'm going to backpedal as hard as I can backpedal on is Francisco Molinari. After watching this guy this week, he hits the golf ball dead straight and he putts lights out. He could win any major. I don't care. He looks that good right now. He's one of the best in the world right now. And I said a few weeks ago, you know, do I think he's going to win? No, but right now
he could.
If you can find a bet out there, you're probably going to get some good odds on that because he easily could win.
Yeah, if anybody thought he was going to be where he is in the world rankings right now, where he's kind of, you know, he's jumped up in the mix of the top sort of 10 players in the world.
Sixth right now?
Yeah, seventh. I think six, seven. Yeah, it could be six. It doesn't matter. Six, seven. It's cutting hairs there. But the fact that he's there, yeah, he's earned it. His play earns it. Could he win at Augusta? That's hard to say.
When I was watching on the weekend with his driver, it was a natural right to left draw every single time, which, as we know, is what you need to ideally win out at Augusta.
Yeah. I think the conditions will dictate that. And, you know, we'll get to it later when we talk about our guest for the week. But talking to tour players, you know, who can win at Augusta a lot comes down to the conditions. So if you end up with a soft golf course, you know, that's going to make it harder for the guys who don't hit it long enough. If the wind blows and the shorter guys can, you know, can control it around the golf course and the other longer players can't maybe reach the par fives or whatever in as often, that brings more guys into it. And, you know, if we look at a Zach Johnson winning, a Mike Weir winning, those are guys that won when the conditions were, you know, windy and struggling a bit. You know, it's a little far out for a forecast at this point. But, you know, if something like that happens condition-wise, which would be more like the Open Championship, which, hey, Molinari is the defending champion at the Open Championship, and that might put him in the mix, right?
I don't see why not. And if you can putt around there, you'll do just fine.
Yeah, and his putting has obviously separated him from his former self.
For sure. Speaking of putting and speaking of guys that people aren't going to be cheering for, probably.
Well, some.
I mean.
Can't say everybody. You're not going to, but
I don't
care. Exclude everyone.
I think that's fair. Sorry, everybody. Matt Kuchar and Sergio Garcia. What is going on with these two? So for anybody that didn't see it, there was, I don't know what hole it was. I apologize. Either way, Sergio has a
8 inches.
Yeah, a two putt to have the hole, right? So he misses his first putt. He has got 8 inches. He goes the backhanded in and he misses. Now, Kuchar didn't apparently say that's good, even though it was 8 inches, and immediately ran over to the official after he saw that he missed it and said, what do I do here? Like, I was going to give it to him, but I didn't.
Yeah.
And Sergio clearly didn't enjoy that whole thing. What's your take? Who's at fault here? Well, I mean, it's a silly, you know what? Go ahead.
Here's the thing. A friend of mine said it the right way, who's a rules official, had said, you know what, no putt is conceded until there is a concession. It's really what it comes down to. I mean, I don't know how much match play that you've played over the years. I don't assume when I play a match, I don't assume that 8-inch putt is given. So, you know,
if Nick had an 8-inch putt, you're putting that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and obviously he's not going to miss it, but it's Sergio's responsibility to make sure that it's conceded or, you know, a worst case scenario, put it in the hole.
Yep, absolutely. That's
all you've got to do. So I know Kuchar was trying to obviously say, hey, you know what? I was going to give it to him.
But was he?
What can I do? I'm sure he was going to. It's an 8-inch putt. He's certainly going to give it to him. But the problem is that what do you do then? If this guy came up there and was irrational and swats an 8-inch putt and misses it, you know, is it really that player, the other player's responsibility to say, oh, I'm going to concede the next hole to even things up?
No. Okay. Yeah. That, when I heard that take, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Concede the next hole. Take a lap. I'm not conceding the next hole because you missed a putt like an idiot.
Yeah.
What I think Kuchar could have done is just acted like he didn't see it. If he actually was going to give him the putt, just act like you didn't see that he missed it and just walk to the next hole. However, this is where I think the conversation's going with Kuchar, is that Kuchar knew what he was doing. Once he saw it, and his competitive side probably took over. He's like, why would I give him up? I didn't say it. I know what the rule is. I'm going to take a free win on a hole if I have to. Why wouldn't I?
Well, I don't know, because we don't know what he's thinking, what's inside his head. I mean, obviously they came out with a little video later on to, you know, a very...
I didn't watch that video. Did you watch this video? Give me a breakdown.
I started to listen to some of the audio, and basically I tuned out because I really knew what it was. It was basically them...
PR stunt.
A little bit. I mean, yes, you know what? It could be somewhat genuine, but, you know, we ran into each other. Like, what are the odds of that? They're going to run into each other the next day. I mean, most people are jetting out of town immediately. Yeah. Was it the
fake after the match? Like, hey, so are we still on for 18 on Monday?
Yeah. I mean, was it their agents getting together and going, hey, you know what? We've already had a little bit of heat, both of us, this year. So we need to sort of take care of things a little bit and see if we can sort of control the situation. I don't know. I mean, that's all speculating, but it didn't look great, that's for sure. No. And it was odd video. And obviously people are, you know, going after it on social media, and rightly so in some cases, you know.
Absolutely. I've always speculated Kuchar's kind of ho-hum, super nice guy approach, if it's actually truthful. I think it's come out a little bit this year that maybe we're going to see a little bit more of his true self. I've heard that he's one of the best chirpers out on tour, and maybe he's not going to have this clean-cut image anymore. However, he's got a lot of those clean-cut sponsors that probably are going to want him to keep up with that, so... Either way, I think it's in the past. However, you know, the two of them, Sergio never had maybe the greatest reputation forever, but Kuchar's always had that smooth, clean rep, and I think they're continuing to get more and more heat as we go through this season.
All I know is it's causing a lot of discussion about an 8-inch putt.
We're talking
about an 8-inch putt. Yeah. So, time to move on.
I've missed shorter, so whatever. Yeah, let's move on, because Graham McDowell picked up a win on the, what do you call that, the other event?
It's an opposite field
opposite event. Yeah. Yeah. Graham McDowell won on the opposite event this week. I didn't see any of that ever on TV, but it's nice to see Graham McDowell win. I'm a big GMAC guy.
Yeah, I mean, I was glued to it more because of the Canadians that were in the field, but seeing McDowell in the mix there, great guy. Happen to have a couple people that I know that work with him on different aspects of his game. He's had a rough go the last number of years. He's dropped, you know, lower than 250. I think he was at 257 in the world rankings. He dropped down to, and this is a guy who obviously won the US Open in 2010. You know, I don't think there's anybody who dislikes Graham McDowell. So certainly a lot of people were cheering for him. And the shot he hit on 17, he hit a great iron in there, just laced it in to make a birdie there. I think there's a lot of people that were pretty happy with this, not just Graham McDowell.
GMAC looks like a guy that you could meet him at a pub and he'd be super cool. He'd talk about whatever.
You meet him at his pub.
At his pub, yeah. Yeah. He has his own pub. He just seems like a great guy. And looking up, you know, going back, he was actually the last major winner at Pebble Beach, and we're going back to Pebble Beach for the U.S. Open this year, and he was the last one to win the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, so kind of a little cool stat there.
Yeah, and he's fighting hard, too, to try to get into the Open Championship at Portrush. Obviously, a native of Northern Ireland, he wants to get in that championship and be there, so, you know, he's dedicated himself back to his game. He's worked hard with everybody from his physical trainers to his putting coach to his mental coach, given a lot of commitment, and that's what he stated. He's committed back to the game, and a little bit like we talked about with Rory, you know, committing back to the game. And, you know, you only get out of it what you put into it. And obviously he's putting a lot more into it now because he's got some pride. And his kids are a little bit older now. He wants to see them. He wants to have them see him when he's at his best. And, you know what? Golf is better when Graham McDowell's playing. How's that?
I like it. One of the best stories out of that weekend, though, is Mackenzie Hughes comes up with a T-second one shot back.
Yeah, one shot so back, close. he made a bogey on 18, but, you know, pretty much everybody was making bogeys on 18, and he was fortunate at when he finished, he was actually in third by himself at that point, and then Chris Stroud, who was also chasing Graham McDowell, he made a bogey on 18, and that actually handed 60,000 more back to Hughes. Hughes was looking like he was going to win about 204,000. He ended up with 264,000 out of it, and, you know, his exemption for winning is up at the end of the year. So this is pretty important for him to not only, you know, make some cash. He's up to about 475 for the year now. He's moved up to 90th, I believe, in the FedEx Cup standings now, which is obviously very important for him to maintain his status and stay out there on tour.
Obviously, he needs to be in that 125 on the FedEx Cup list by the end of the year. Keep him back out on tour. There was a couple other Canadians in the field. We had Ben Silverman finish T12, and David Hearn finished a nice T18 in the last week as well.
Yeah, getting three Canadians there in the top 20, that's good to see. And a lot of momentum for those guys heading into more play coming up. Hughes himself, I mean, he had missed five cuts, I guess, just before last week, and he tied for 13th at Valspar. So he had a lot of momentum coming into the event in the Dominican Republic. So good to see, and we'll see if that carries into next week or this week coming up, I guess.
Speaking of all these Canadians out there, the Canadian Open announced that they've already sold out all tickets for Friday's event. That just happens to be the Florida Georgia Line concert.
What a coincidence.
I'm not saying that maybe they're just so excited for golf on that Friday that maybe they'll go see a concert. But that's
a ton of girls on the golf course.
You know what? We predicted that. We figured it was going to make a big difference. Yep. I mean, you know, $75 for people to basically go see Florida Georgia Line and a golf tournament. Not a bad play by them. I mean, their purpose is obviously to get people out there. And the fact that they could sell out the Friday, like 6 days in. I mean, the tickets just went on sale on March 22nd. Mm-hmm. And they're sold out on a Friday. And I actually had some communication with them this week. I'm laughing because I'm thinking of my communication with Golf Canada this week. And I was joking with them that, you know, this might be the first Friday sellout since 1904. And, you know, when some quartet came out with like Sweet Adeline, and the big concert on the Friday night in 1904 there or whatever. But they can take 25,000 people. Hamilton's a little smaller, as we mentioned last week on the pod, that, you know, Glen Abbey is sort of unlimited. They can only take 25,000 a day at Ancaster. And yeah, they've sold 25,000 tickets already for the Friday night.
I think there's
a Friday night. I'm talking about the
Scotty's already thinking about the Friday. He's not even going to be, we're not even going to see this guy. Saturday morning, we're going to have to drag him out of bed to get him up for his media duties.
He's in the front of the stage.
That's sort of like the famous line. There's a lady, I guess, who was interviewed about the Phoenix, the Waste Management Open. And somebody went up to her and said, "Hey, do you go to the golf tournament?" "Oh, I love that tournament. I go every night." She's talking about going to the concerts and going to the parties or whatever.
That's Scotty.
You know what? Good on them. You know, if that's going to get people out there, hopefully there's a lot of those people get to the golf course. That would be nice to see. Yeah. But, you know, it's going to be a great event. And maybe, you know, maybe Rory had something to do with that as well. That was the second announcement last week. And maybe that prompted.
It doesn't hurt having Rory there. I mean, he can bring out the ladies himself, obviously. Yeah. But no, that's going to be great. Hopefully he's up near the top of the leaderboard. And that should flock a lot of those people that may be just going to the concert. Who knows? Maybe he'll bring them to the tournament on the Friday. I can't wait. I think it's going to be an amazing concert.
We're talking about the concert.
Oh, no. We're a golf podcast, and we're both just talking about watching two country boys singing their love songs
Hamilton is going to be a great setting, and this week's guest who I was talking to, I actually talked to him a little bit about Ancaster Golf and Country Club, or Hamilton Golf and Country Club in Ancaster, and he talked a little bit about loving that course, and I mean, that was big for him, and you know, you can tell us who it is.
Yeah, so this week, Scotty was able to pull off an exclusive one-on-one interview with Brad Faxon. What did you and Brad get into outside of, did you talk about Florida Georgia Line? Does he know who they are?
I don't know if we actually talked about Florida Georgia Line. We talked more about the actual golf course at Hamilton Golf and Country Club and the fact that he loves it. You know, he will share some stories about, you know, coming up to Canada. You know, we mentioned Rory. He works with Rory on his putting. So we have some insight on that as well. And it was a nice opportunity. Basically, Titleist and FootJoy now sponsor the PGA Training Academy here in Canada. And they had him come up to Ottawa. And I was lucky enough to be able to sit down with him for about 25 minutes or so. And we covered a number of topics, not only, you know, Rory a little bit, his current coaching role that he's involved in, some of his past as well in dealing with, you know, charities, how he grew up, how he got into the game. And we touched, like I said, on Canada. And then we also got into the Masters a little bit as well, which, you know, obviously it's coming up and he had a few things to say about it.
I think you sold it. Let's send it over to our exclusive interview with Brad Faxon right about now.
All right. First off, Brad Faxon, welcome to Ottawa.
Yeah, thank you. First time.
Yeah. Welcome to the Tee Talk podcast. You're here today. You're on behalf of Acushnet, Titleist, FootJoy.
Why don't we start a little bit with your relationship with the company? I know you shared that a bit today with the room that's out there, but what brought you to the company and what's it meant to you to have that long-standing relationship with the company?
Well, I grew up not far away from where headquarters were, where Titleist and FootJoy's headquarters were in Acushnet, Massachusetts. And the club where I was, the town where I lived, Barrington, Rhode Island, had a great golf course called Rhode Island Country Club. It is a Donald Ross golf course. And a lot of...
Scary first tee shot.
There's out of bounds, right. The courses, it was a half an hour from headquarters, and it was a good family club. You know, there was pool, there was tennis, great golf practice facilities, and the town was a great place to raise kids, good school system, close to Providence, close to Boston, close to Cape Cod. So all those things worked together, and when I was a young kid caddying, when I was 12, 13 years old, you know, you couldn't help but notice every box in the pro shop was Titleist, every single one. And the pro there had a great relationship with a lot of the Titleist guys, and they took extra care of this guy, Fred Bruno, who was a mentor to me when I was growing up. So that's kind of how I got introduced. I proudly say I've never played another golf ball besides Titleist, and you know, it's been 36 or 7 years now with the company, officially with the company.
Do they feel like family to you more than anything?
No doubt about it. Guys that have worked there, you know, there's a lot of them that have worked there as long as I have. It's a one company career for a lot of these players. And really, the guy I believe that's been the smartest man in the industry, Wally Uline, was a member of the club. I met him when we were both very young, both before we were ever married, you know, and he was one of the hardest working, greatest mentors, big brother figures to me, and a good player. You know, it doesn't mean you have to be a good golfer to run a golf company, but I think knowing the game really is important. And I think that's underrated.
Yeah. You know, you're kind of a different phase in your life now. You're doing a little bit of everything, but one thing that you are doing is a little bit of coaching, and kind of what's that mean to you as far as giving back a little bit? How is that sort of, I don't know, closing the loop a little bit on how you started and where you're at now?
Well, it's coaching is something that's always been, I don't know, first of all, I've had lessons from more teachers in the world than anybody, and I say that more ashamedly than anything else, not bragging about it. But I liked communication and instruction. And before I got into, if you call it coaching, quote unquote, I've always been someone that got approached by players, especially about putting, about,
right,
you know, can you take a look? What do you think? And if you like this game, it's a fickle part, isn't it? Putting it comes and goes. There's days where you feel like you'll
even
never miss. Yeah, I mean, there's days you feel like you'll never miss, and there's days you feel like you'll never make again.
Yeah,
and everything's it's related. It's blended in there too. You know, putting to me is very unique. Styles are very individualistic, and how you slept, the conversation you had with your wife before you go to the course, what's going on in the office, just bad luck sometimes. I mean, there, you know, when you're looking at what are the key factors to what you need to do when you play, your state of mind is the number one thing, without question.
Yeah.
And the Hall of Fame list of great putters would see very few styles that were identical, not arguable, but you wouldn't have any of them in there that didn't at least for the most part have a really good attitude when they putted. And it's not just attitude though, is it could be how you walk, what you eat, how you breathe. It's so many things that come to it. How you react and how do you respond to your misses. How do you respond to your makes? So the hardest thing that I'm learning is it's really hard to give a one-hour putting lesson. You know, these things take a lifetime.
I mean, how do you dig through all that and find the tenets that you can kind of catch on to and pass on to others?
It's a challenge. And I come at this from a playing side.
Right.
And most instructors that have, you know, most instructors play the game when they were younger or turn to instruction when their competitive days ended, when they got more analytical. And the best players in the world weren't necessarily analytical.
They were skillful.
They were very skillful and very talented. And finding out a lot about a person is really important. And sometimes you can, you know, if a player say they come to you, their head is filled with thoughts, which is very common. Mm-hmm. It's emptying out those thoughts is important. And sometimes you got to give them a thought to empty out their head of other thoughts. Do you know what I mean by that?
Oh, right? 100%.
Yeah. And if you've had a lesson, a swing lesson or a putting lesson,
yeah,
you know, you could be thinking of 10 things and you could have a new swing thought every time, but then you can say, well, if you just do this, this right. is all you need to concentrate on. Let's just say it's moving your shoulders more level than rocking them.
And sometimes it's not that piece, like you said, it's getting rid of the baggage that they probably yeah. brought with them, right?
And sometimes adding something helps to get rid of all the baggage. This is all you need to concentrate on.
Yeah.
Other times it's way more psychological. Sometimes it's pre-shot routine.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's what their hands look on the putter. I mean, I see people with a good-looking grip. I love a good-looking grip. But now what's a fundamental grip now? We don't even know.
No. I mean, yeah, that's the thing as far as like commonalities. I mean, where do things like, you know, you look at the back of this laptop here and you'll see a couple things that might be familiar, but, you know, where do things like the equipment, which obviously you know, a long relationship with Scotty, and then even a little bit from the technical side of it, where do those aspects as far as where do they fit into the picture for you?
It's funny with technology. I mean, I see your Blast Motion sticker there and I've been with Blast now for 3 years, and they have amazing technology because it's a very small and accurate piece that can go anywhere with you and Bluetooth to your phone and give you all kinds of information. And what I like about Blast, the device, when it goes on your putter, you don't know it's there. When I see some of these other putting technologies, the SAM putting lab, which is really an impressive putting technology. It costs thousands and thousands of dollars, and you put this thing on the shaft, and it changes totally the weight of your club. I don't know if that's a great thing, yeah. But it gives you information. So right. now we got to really, what do you, when you get this information, what do you do with it?
Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, do you believe in the technology?
Yes.
Is that a critical piece to it? I think Capto, have you tried that one out?
Oh, there's I just a got a Capto.
I might have heard that.
Yeah.
But I mean, that technology, you say it's a piece of it, you know, is there a percentage that's on there? Or is it, you know, really just a small other piece that you use to fill in for everything else that's important in putting?
So, because the teachers of the past didn't have technology, didn't mean they didn't understand maybe science, right?
Right.
Or, I don't know if you call it science, but they knew why things were happening.
They just maybe they couldn't quantify explain. It, yeah.
Correct. They couldn't measure it. And now you can measure things. So when I see a player that comes to me that's struggling, sometimes technology can be helpful to me but hurtful to them.
Right.
So I can see numbers, but a good teacher is always able to say one or two things, the least amount of things, to help the most amount of things. And what I learned from Blast, and I still think this is true, when a player has some kind of a rhythm and a tempo to their stroke, if Blast would say, if you can get their tempo to be more consistent, if you can be closer to a 2-to-1 tempo, that tends to fix the other things that Blast can measure, whether it's face rotation, lie and loft angles, changes. Concentrate on tempo first. And if you think about, to me, the history of the greatest players in the world, their thoughts were a lot of times just rhythm, tempo, balance. They were simple phrases.
Yeah. I mean, you say that when we talk about baggage and things like that, you know, that's applicable to the average putter or the average player, but it's also to the top players as well. I mean, you mentioned doing some work with Rory and the fact that there was some simplicity to what you were talking to him about, whether it's a putting game or, you know, those type of things. You know, it's applicable to those guys as well.
It's very applicable, but and it's different, too. It's and it might be different from Rory than it would be with Adam Scott or Jordan Spieth, how they think and what I'm proudest about with Rory, look, we've been together for a year and his technique is definitely better, but we've worked very little on technique, you know, and that doesn't make sense to a lot of people. How does it change? You know, it changes by freeing a player's mind up a little bit. It changes by doing, I do a lot of skill-based exercises, games, drills that I feel like can help. I mean, we've had some kind of, if you call it a technical thought, but feels, thoughts that the player can help or use. But it's also trying to keep a player's mind quiet while they putt. And then I think what the coolest thing for me, Rory's, if he's not the best player in the world right now, he's 1A or 1B. He's great. His statistics would show you that he's gained more world ranking points this year than anybody else. We talk about situations. You know, how would you react, or what are you thinking about when you are over a putt? And think about, if you watch the Players' Championship this year, on the 12th hole is the drivable par 4 with the water on the left of the green. He drove it just to the right. He pitched it 12 feet by. It could have been a 4 or 5 foot putt, and the wind and the green were kind of fast. He got up over this putt, and he stepped away. Now, the announcers always say, oh, he's uncomfortable with this one. Well, when a player steps away, they are uncomfortable. Sure. Well, but is that a negative? It would have been a negative, and you wouldn't have been able to tell if he just kept putting it. He would have said, oh, that was a bad stroke, rather than something in their mind. So when I saw him step away, I was excited. And when I saw it go in, I said, he's going to win. I think that was the game-changing moment for me. And then, of course, he made an incredible par putt on the very next hole, 13, from 4 feet. And then the birdie out of the bunker on 15 was probably the best putt of the day. And certainly he said that the iron shot he hit out of the bunker was a 6-iron that he had to cut 15 yards. And he said that may be the best bunker shot he's ever hit.
Does that change how you watch golf now a little bit?
Oh, I'm a wreck. No, I mean, I haven't had somebody that I've gotten as close to as McIlroy as a, you know, I don't know if I call myself a coach. I don't know what I am, you know.
Advisor,
a consultant, sure. A spiritual, we'll go with that. Whatever. And I've had a lot of other players come to see me now because of Rory. But I always had players asking. But I don't know if I want to do it for the masses. I still like.
He's a special guy. He really is. I mean, I've interviewed him before, and I know how honest he is, and how he is, how he portrays himself, and how he acts, and whatever. So, you know, obviously, you guys blend well, right?
Yep. We do, and. The fact that he's kept me around for years, like, it's
longer than the coaches you had.
But I mean, it's also I think I've shown him some trust. I think his team, you know, his team likes how quiet his mind is, his attitude is, and I'm excited. But I mean, I don't think I want to go out on tour with players and stand behind them.
Sure. Yeah.
You're aiming too far left. You're aiming too far right. Yeah.
You just do your
but
thing.
I get, and I'm not saying that there's not a need for that.
No. It's just not for you.
I don't think it's for me. Yeah. I mean, if I didn't have other things going on in my life, maybe.
Sure.
But, I mean, I love my deal with Fox Sports. I love talking about the game because I love the game.
Yeah.
I think I understand it. I still think I'm close enough to the modern-day player. You know, I haven't been around playing with Rory or Dustin or Woodland or Fowler the other day. I mean, I'm seeing what these guys can do. You know, it's I'm watching every single thing they do.
Is that helping you enjoy, you know, having your show, Just the Facts? I mean, that's the fun part.
Yeah, and radio to me was, I wasn't looking to do this, and Sirius approached me and asked me if I would be interested in doing it. They wanted me to do a show 5 days a week, and I know when you do it, that's a big commitment. Yeah. And you got to be ready every day. Yeah. And they offered me this one slot, 4 to 5 on a Monday afternoon. Mondays are always an easy day. Never easy, but there's always information. There's always something to talk about because you've had the weekend to play golf or to watch golf. And I've had a few guests. I mean, McIlroy came on my show. I've had David Ledbetter on the show. It's good. While I was up there, Graham McDowell just texted me because I would love to get him on the show. And who has a better accent than the Northern Irish?
It'd be great to see him at Port Rush if he can. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, no question.
On another vein, obviously someone you've gotten along with well and known for your whole life is Billy Andrade. And you know, you've done a lot of charitable work with him. How important has that been for your life?
Oh, we've been friends. I mean, I think I first met Billy when he was 11 or 12 years old, and his putter was so short it wouldn't even fit out of the top of the bag. I'm 3 years older than Billy, so we were, I was always kind of a little bit ahead of him. And then everything I did as a kid, he did better. You know, he not that it got me mad, but I mean, I was kind of a slow and steady, and he catapulted up and had great junior, great amateur, and great college, and great professional career. And he's a Canadian Open champion. I think I was the first player on the green when he beat Bob Friend. So we go back a long time. You know, the charity stuff, I don't think we ever thought all this could happen. We have two different charities. The Andre Faxon, which one I spoke about earlier today, really is the most meaningful because we did that. We grew that from zero to what it became. We
and had, that was prompted by his brother, correct?
Right. And the school where his brother went to was a big fundraising school. And we raised $500,000 for that school in 2 years. And then we kind of expanded to help other charities in the state of Rhode Island. And we had a celebrity tournament that we had. I mean, it's a who's who of players. We had Bobby Orr and Ray Bourque and Cam Neely and Sandy Koufax and Charles Barkley and Kevin McHale and Julius Erving and Bill Murray and Joe Pesci and Glenn Frey and Roger Clemens and Andy Penn. I mean, we had
the
greatest list and the friendships we've got because of that. I mean, Billy named his son Cameron after Cam Neely.
Wow.
We had Don Sweeney and Teddy Donato, and we had hockey players that loved playing for us. We had football players, Steve Grogan, Steve Goskowski, the kicker for the Patriots. I mean, all these guys loved to play in our event.
Yeah. And now you've got a Canadian that's been coming down to the CVS quite successfully, one from this area, Brooke Henderson. How's been your experience with Brooke?
She's three-time champion.
Yeah, is that crazy?
Mad because I finished second in our own event five times, and then Billy had never won it, and then he got paired with Brooke and Keegan Bradley, and they won three in a row. So I got McIlroy to play last year, and I said, come on, Rory, and we just didn't have it in us. But
what are your thoughts on watching her?
I love her swing. I love her dad. I hope they don't change it. I hope she just stays the same beautiful girl that she is, and I mean that as a person.
Yeah.
It just, she's so kind. She's intensely driven. I love her golf swing. I love her sister. I mean, it's just, they're so great to have.
Now, there's somebody who, you know, is big involved in supporting junior golf. That's a big thing for Brooke. And I know another part of aspect, you're involved in the buttonhole. Why don't you explain that a little bit?
You know a lot. So it's a spinoff of a first tee. It's kind of a derivative, right? The buttonhole. Short course we have is 9 par threes, driving range. You know, it's basically your inner city golf course where kids can come and get away. I mean, we're literally from the worst spots of Providence, mile away from places you just wouldn't ever even walk through.
Yeah.
And we've put a bunch of kids through this place from a bunch of different schools in the area. And it's the home of the Rhode Island Golf Association, Superintendents Association. This buttonhole was founded by a very successful businessman named Eddie Morrow, who was a golf nut, a state amateur champion, a RIGA golfer, who was a rules guy, USGA guy. And Morrow has given back more than anybody can believe. And we've crushed it. We have a LPGA player named Megan Kang, who's from the area. She's come through buttonhole, hadn't played before, then didn't know anything about the game. We're seeing success from it. You know, when you talk about grow the game initiatives, we're way past helping people with golfers. We're helping them with their lives. And that's the coolest part about it.
Why not some thoughts on Canadian Open? You mentioned, obviously, Billy winning. You had a near miss. You mentioned it earlier. But, you know, are those your greatest memories of coming to Canada?
Well, I have a lot of great
memories. Short of going to the hockey game tonight.
This will be right up there. I mean, playing in the National Opens were big deals, weren't they? I mean, after the U.S. Open, you'd have a U.S. Open, British Open would mean the two biggest titles. And then the Canadian Open was always
right up there.
The next one, always. And it was always at a premier part of the schedule between the U.S. and the British Opens. I won an Australian Open, which I thought was really kind of cool. And that would have been maybe the, if you're looking at national titles, that would have been right after the Canadian. So, you know, I thought it was great when the RCGA decided to go back to different courses. You know, we had stayed at Glen Abbey for a while, and then we went to Royal Montreal.
Yeah.
We went to the Hamilton, which was my favorite place.
Yeah.
And that was the course in Vancouver. Shaughnessy.
Hard golf course. First tee shot is killer. Killer. I've seen guys, like, come to their knees trying to hit their tee shot off that first tee.
I've been lucky enough to have traveled a lot playing golf, and is there a more beautiful city in the world than Vancouver?
Yeah.
I mean, it goes right there Sydney or Stockholm or San Francisco. And then the culture, having, you know, the French at Montreal. And what place blew me away more than anything was Quebec City.
Yeah.
Played a senior tour event.
Feels
there
like in Europe, 5 or 6 years. Right?
It was as neat a place as I've ever been.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning.
Hamilton, obviously you loved it. You mentioned that. You're going to pass on a few tidbits to Rory, because obviously, you know, he's going to play this year, and, you know, thought about that yet, maybe?
Well, Rory hits his 4-iron where I hit my driver, so...
He's going to play the golf course a little differently?
Yeah. And, by the way, tough greens.
Yeah, you know, very.
You're going to have to be on the correct side of a lot of them. But he'll hit shots on holes you won't believe.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much different the course is now from when I played it.
Not too much. I mean, it still has its same character, and obviously the players are going to really love it when they come there and see it. Friday's already sold out, believe it or not. They've got a couple concerts going on the Friday and Saturday night, so Friday's already sold out. They can only take 25,000 people, but it's already sold out, and they only put the tickets on sale on the 22nd of March. So how's that already? And obviously, Rory committing was a big boost.
Yeah, I know he committed. I saw that post he put out a couple of weeks ago, how big that is to get that early commitment.
Yeah. One last question for you. Headed into the Masters, any predictions?
Well, you know who I want to see win.
Of course.
I think a real sentimental favorite, somebody that everybody's going to pull for, is Jordan Spieth. You know, he's kind of been out of focus. He's out of the top 25 in the world, I think. You know, he won a few years ago. He looked like the heir apparent, and now it seems like every part of his game's just not working. But I still think that having Tiger Woods in the mix will keep everybody alive. There's always Phil Mickelson.
Mm-hmm. Can't count him out, obviously. No. You know, he's still winning.
And, you know, you never can count on Dustin Johnson. But, I mean, Augusta is still one of the courses where the short game is really important and how you manage yourself.
Do you think if the weather's poor, maybe that changes?
It always has.
Obviously, we saw that with Zach Johnson.
He survived in windier conditions. As did Langer a couple of years ago at 59, you know, when it got very windy for 3 days. That helps more of the players that have different styles of game. You know, you could have bad weather that's wet, and it eliminates the shorter hitter because the ball is just not going far enough. And the other thing too, like for a guy like McIlroy, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people are going to put a lot of pressure on him as if he wasn't put it on himself more, but peaking for a major, completing the Grand Slam, all those topics. And then we talk about
that's all going to be the storyline. I mean, you're going to have to talk about it on the show, I'm sure.
No, obviously. But I'll talk about it with him too,
right.
because it's like, how do you can't stop the guy from screaming at you on the eighth hole, hey, well, you got to win this to win the grand, you know.
Yeah.
So how you deal with that thing affects how you putt. And, you know, it's like, I think you got to get out in front of that stuff.
Perfect. Well, thank you for joining us today.
My
really
pleasure.
Appreciate
Good
it.
Job.
Please enjoy your trip here in Canada. Enjoy the hockey game tonight.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brad, for that exclusive interview. I wish I was sitting there with you. He seems like an amazing guy. One of the things that he's really known for, obviously, is his putting. That was always what he was known for on tour, and now guys like he mentioned, Rory McIlroy, are coming to him to learn some different techniques and some tips. What did you learn from Brad in your chat about putting or from his seminar today?
We talked about a number of things. I mean, we had the audio, but we talked a little bit after that as well from a coaching perspective, just exchanged some ideas. And one of the things that he really kind of adheres to is the fact that there's a lot of skill development that's needed. There's a lot of intuitive things. And he looks at it from a player standpoint. He knows he's a player. So he kind of brings some of the thoughts that way. So he looks at some of the training, not so much of just using technology, for an example, but using skill development and setting up different drills and getting players to kind of do different things to sort of, you know, kind of putt more like a kid, really. I mean, you know, he talked about working with Rory and the fact that, you know, he had to try to get him to, you know, feel like he was years ago, where he's freed up. Mm-hmm. I think the impact on me really was the fact that, you know, it's looking at the golfer as a sort of a whole being and not just look at numbers and different things, that there's a lot of different aspects. They might not be traditional, but you really got to find out what works best for that player that's right in front of you, which, you know, obviously everybody's an individual, and really that's something that, you know, he emphasizes and he understands.
So what's your philosophy around putting? If you're, say you have an hour to go practice putting, what do you usually tell people to go do?
One of the biggest things for me is club face control. Knowing, you know, how to get the club face square as possible to where you want the golf ball to start. A lot of players just don't get the golf ball started where they need to. They think they can, but maybe they haven't got either the technique to do it, or the skill to be able to manipulate the club face.
Or the right putter. I think a lot of people, you know, from the fitting perspective, a lot of people go by the looks of a putter rather than what they actually need.
Yeah, or they just go to the putting green and try something and, you know, one putt goes in the hole and they go, oh, that's the one. You know, it hasn't been fit. No. It might be the wrong loft. There's a lot of different factors that play in there. So fitting, as far as the equipment, certainly important. And you can't fix a putting stroke just by buying a putter. It just doesn't work that way.
Sorry, Nick.
I think I've been using my same putter since I was like, 18,
well, I'll tell you
maybe.
What, Brad shared in the seminar portion, he shared that he's actually only used about 3 putters in his whole career. Think about that. So for him, he started with a Bullseye, played around with some Ping stuff on My Day, and then in 1994, he went to Scotty Cameron. That's when Scotty went to Titleist, and, you know, they worked on some stuff there, and he's basically putted with that. He's kind of his whole career. So it's confidence. It's the ability to read greens as well. I mean, that was one thing myself I was poor at. I didn't realize how poor I was until I actually went and worked with a putting coach. And I will tell you, in the last 20 years, I've paid for one golf lesson. Now, you know, you have to understand most golf pros will help each other with, you know, different things. So, you know, they're doing that for free. But I paid for a lesson and I went down to Rochester to a guy named John Graham, who coincidentally is the putting coach for Graham McDowell and works with a lot of other players as well. And myself and another pro went down there to learn aim point with him and go through a number of things to learn how badly we were aiming, really what it amounted to as far. And it wasn't so much of, I say aiming, but reading the putts. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, we could be making great strokes, but if we weren't reading the greens correctly, we weren't getting the golf ball started where we needed to. And I can tell you, it transformed how I looked at putting. So for people to, you know, look at a putter or just look at straight technique, there's more to it than that. And if they don't understand how to read a green, all those things that you do are not going to, you know, pan out into anything.
For the casual listeners, aim point is when you're watching the guys on TV, they're standing over the putts and they have 1 to 4 fingers up. And that's basically, I'm really dumbing this down, but that's basically how much. So they're standing over there. They got 1 to 4 fingers up. They're holding it on the break.
You can have many fingers, but.
Sure. If you have 6 fingers on one hand, then yeah, but usually they're using one hand. Regardless,
even my daughter knows how many fingers are on
her
hand.
Again, I'm trying to dumb it down just for listeners from like a 5.
I can explain it.
Yeah, what? Go ahead.
All right, here's the simple way to do it. Basically, it's a system to increase the probability of making putts by having somewhat more accurate reads. So what you do is you're using your feet to feel what the slope is in the ground, and you have to train to be able to do that, to know what the percentage of the slope is and get a feel for it. And that obviously creates the number of fingers that you see, but you also have to use your arm length as well to adjust that based on the speed. And what it does is it gives you a more general way to read the break without by using your feet to get a feel for it and training yourself. So it sounds complicated. I know. I think I was trying to simplify it, but I wasn't.
Isn't that exactly kind of what I said?
I'm just glazed over right now. I'm like,
okay.
But see how invested he was when I was.
I think it's a more accurate way to read. And really, what it comes down to, I don't use every aspect of it when I putt. And you know, John has said that was fine for me. You won't see me with my fingers up in the air most of the time, but what I do is I'm able to read the greens better with my feet and get an idea of where the actual line is to start the putt and realize and understand that, you know, a putt that's breaking towards the hole has a better chance of going in than a putt that's breaking away from the hole. So what happens for most people is they don't read enough break into putts and they end up putting below the hole. And unfortunately, if you look at a slope, generally the grade of it is, you know, steeper a little bit below a hole and the ball is working itself away and you end up with a lot of three putts. Mm-hmm. So what happens now for me is I don't make as many three putts. I make more putts, but I also don't make as many three putts. So it makes sense that way. So.
I mean, from this to what we did last week to, you know, the fact that we have a PGA teaching professional on this podcast, if after each week you don't want to go out and get a lesson by somebody, I don't know what will. After last week, I told you guys on the podcast I had an itch. How many videos did I send you over the last, like, 10 swing videos?
Yeah, at least, which is great, though. Yeah. It's fantastic. I mean, I love that. I love the fact that anybody that wants to work on their game, I appreciate that. You know, you're not going to get better if you don't put the work in. So if you're willing to do some work, I respect that totally.
I love it. I mean, we're working on it. Things are getting there. We're trying a few things. It might get somewhere where it needs to go.
But yeah, you got one outdoor session this week. I guess you were in Ottawa.
I was up in Ottawa. I saw the ball. We talked about it on the last podcast. We said, you know, that first ball flight. Oh.
Yeah, it was good, eh?
And it's like, you know, yeah, you warm up with something light, like a wedge, but it's like, we all wanted to see that first driver.
Yes. Yeah. Out there. And how'd it go? Sideways?
Just a straight bullet. It was low. Like, it probably didn't go far, but it just nice stinger.
Did you think I'm going to quit now?
No.
Well, I'm mad.
There's nothing better than that first driver outside.
And what are you working on in your game?
You and I have really broken down the swing, and what we have realized is I'm just not turning enough all the way through the backswing was step one. So we're working on that, getting that backswing, full turn through the backswing, getting that lead shoulder behind the golf ball, which I was not doing before. It was more shifting a lot. And now because of the shift in the past, I used to have the shift forward, which caused what you've probably heard is like a very ugly looking old school reverse C type of Jack Nicklaus thing without the skill. and so we're trying to get the proper turn through the golf ball. And then from there, we'll work on where the actual club is. But it feels a lot better. Picked up about 15 yards of carry distance on the driver with it. So yeah, helpful to start, that's for sure.
That's a good start.
Playing a lot of Wii Golf.
Yeah, how's that going?
Great.
You know what? The good part about the Wii Golf, you don't lose any actual golf balls.
This is true. It's a lot cheaper for me.
Yeah, there you go.
Sweet. Let's transition over into the ladies game right now. Yeah. It's a big week this week. We not only do we have our first major of the year, but they have the first Augusta National Women's Amateur, which should be on TV. And if that's going to get me pumped up to watch, obviously, the Masters next week, but anytime you can watch any golf, I don't even care if they put out like 18 handicaps at Augusta National. Actually, that might be more entertaining. But if they put out anybody out on Augusta National, I'm going to watch that on TV. This is I'm excited.
Well, the neat part is that obviously leading into Masters Week, we're going to have Saturday is the final round at Augusta National for that championship. Mm-hmm. They do start out at Champions Retreat, which is another golf course, the first two rounds. All the players in the field, there's 72 players in the field, they all get a practice round at Augusta National on Friday. So it's kind of unusual for a format. in the fact that they're playing two rounds. They have a day off where everybody plays a practice round at Augusta National. And then the 30 that made the cut will play the final round on Saturday. So they're giving it big coverage. NBC is doing a lot of work with it. Golf Channel as well. They're going to have updates during the week. They're going to break in as far as updated scoring. There will be coverage on Saturday. So think about this now. Not only do we get all of next week talking about Augusta National, we get Saturday talking about the Augusta National Women's Amateur, then we get the drive, chip, and putt on Sunday. I'm at explode, actually. I mean, it's pretty exciting to be able to see that much golf from Augusta.
No such thing as Augusta overload, that's for sure.
I don't think so.
Do we have a couple Canadians in the amateur event this year, do you know?
Yeah, we've got one, Brigitte Thibault, who's from Quebec, who goes to Fresno State, is in the field. She's only played golf for 4 or 5 years, which is pretty impressive.
Pretty good.
Yeah, and the fact that she's there, she's pretty excited. I've been following some of her Instagram feed. I think her dad is there with her. She's been going to all the different events, and so that'll be fun to follow her. Among the players in the field, though, we do have a large contingent that have played in Canada. We've had the World Junior Girls Golf Championship, which is an initiative of Golf Ontario, Golf Canada, a few other associations that's been happening for the last 4 or 5 years. So I think in the field this week, our 7 of the players are played at Camelot Golf Club last year in that championship, including Athaya Thitikul, I think is her pronunciation or her name. I'm working on that one. I know I've written it a few times. She shot 60 in the final round to win by 2 last year at Camelot. She's my favorite to win this week. She's won, I believe, 12 different amateur events in the last 2 years. She's only 16.
Is that good?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. She also won a ladies European tour event when she was 14 in 2017. 14. So, yeah. So,
what were you doing at 14, Nick?
Oh, I don't even remember.
You weren't winning ladies European tour events, that's for sure.
trying to learn how to kickflip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's my favorite this week in the field, and hopefully Brigitte has a good week as well. But it'll be nice to see. There's been a lot of great coverage for it already. They had some social media videos out about the theme song that they created especially for it with an orchestra that was primarily made up of women that were creating the song. There's a lot of really cool things that are about this week. And hopefully it'll expand as well so that, you know, maybe they'll get more than one round at Augusta National. Maybe eventually they'll offer, you know,
full 4-day tournament.
Yeah, full 4 days there. That would be neat to see. I mean, I know it's tough. A lot of people have discussed that this week, but I know the one situation that sort of impedes that a little bit is the fact that, you know, if you do have another championship that's happening with 72 players for 4 days and practice rounds, it's going to tear up the golf course a bit. You know, it's going to be in different spots maybe, but you're talking about a major championship, and if the golf course is not as pristine as possible, it's maybe not as good. So
that's fair. I would love to see an actual LPGA event at Augusta every single year. And I mean, we don't need to dive into the history of Augusta with women not being allowed there. They've done a lot over the last few years, and whether it was late or not, let's give them credit for what they have done. And this is a big step in the right direction. So I would love to see an LPGA event out there and seeing the best in the world on that golf course. But again, I would just love to see as much as I can out there.
Well,
but
just imagine that. I mean, if we look at our Canadian contingent, we've got some great players that are out playing the LPGA right now. But imagine what the viewership would look like in Canada if Brooke Henderson was playing Augusta National. Just think about that.
Well, she is playing this week somewhere else.
She is. The LPGA does have a major this week, too. We haven't even got to that yet.
We haven't even got to that. Where are we playing this week, Scotty?
We got the ANA Inspiration, which is in Rancho Mirage. We've got basically the old Colgate Championship. It is the first major of the year for the women and the first major overall. And certainly we've got two Canadians in the field. Brooke is playing and Elena Sharp as well. Unfortunately, Brooke is not coming off a great finish. She missed a cut last week.
Yeah, missed cuts.
Yeah, very, very rare. She's only had an 8 in her pro career since she joined the LPGA. And she missed just by one. She had amazing.
That's when you so impressive. I know. When was her first PGA start? Like 15 or 16?
She had the two Canadian Opens early. So that would have been in 13 and 14, I guess.
What was she, 11?
pretty much. And then obviously she started, 2015 regularly on the tour. So yeah, only 8 cuts since then. And that's sort of, it's almost Tiger-like when you think about it as far as missed cuts. And the unfortunate part is that the Kia Classic, she had 3 double bogeys on her card and only missed by 1, which is too bad because she had some opportunities coming in on 16 and 17 there at Aviara, and she missed by 1. So yeah, maybe it gave her a little bit more time to prepare for this week, and we'll see if she can maybe get a jump into Poppy's Pond this week.
Yeah, why not? That'd be awesome. I was talking to also our good buddy Ryan DeVoe over the weekend, just wondering where his head's at going in. He was looking forward to getting, prior before last week, he was looking forward to getting some good work in last week. So they're heading off to their first major of the year feeling good. So we're obviously cheering for Ryan and Ryan out there. Hopefully maybe she picks up her first major, and well, it would actually be her first victory out on tour. But
yeah, I mean, Pernilla Lindberg did that last year. That was her first win in a major, so it's not unprecedented. And Ryan O'Toole has definitely been playing well, so I'm sure it'd be good to see Ryan and Ryan. And if it's not Elena Sharp or Brooke Henderson, if we can have a Canadian caddy on the bag to get a championship.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, sure, friend of the show. That works as well, right?
If they win, I'm gonna go ahead and say we'll have both of them on next week if they win. That's Ryan, you're listening. Make that happen, buddy. But next week, we got a big, big episode next week. Masters preview show all next week. I can't wait. I don't think we should get too far into it. Brad touched on his picks. We'll touch on our picks next week. We're going to have some great guests on here that are going to give us a nice preview of the show. So I can't wait. It's only a week away, but this weekend's gonna set me up. A lot of ladies golf's gonna set me up. There is a male tournament on this week. I forget what it's even called.
Valero Texas Open.
That's how good of a guy
which is kind of great, actually, if you think about that. I mean, the women are definitely gonna get a spotlight this week.
I love it.
With the amateur and a major championship going as well at the same time, and certainly it's well deserved. And we do have some Canadians playing at Valero, and Corey Connors Monday qualified. He won a 6-for-1 playoff to get in there, so we can't sort of leave that out. And the champion this week, it gets the last spot into the field for the Masters, so there's an opportunity there for maybe a Canadian to play their way in.
Let's go Corey, pick up a win, and we'll see you at Augusta next week.
All right, sounding good. Looking forward to next week and talking more about the Masters.
Can't wait. But before we go, we have to do a few bit of housekeeping, as we keep touching on every single week. We have a big tournament coming up next month. We have the Flagstick Open out at Equinel Golf Club. Head over to flagstickopen.com. Sign up today. The prizes keep growing and growing each week. Scotty sends me a message of, you're not going to believe what we got in the bag now. We're filling up quick. Filling up quick. I had a couple buddies text me tonight. They're signed up, ready to go. And as we said, it's one of the best tournaments that bang for your buck in this area. I can't wait. It's going to be a blast. Maybe I'll have Nick on my bag. I don't know.
Would he be? Have you caddied before?
No.
Perfect.
You do not want me to caddy.
Oh, if you just carry the clubs.
Yeah, it looks like the green's leaning right, boy. Maybe?
Yeah, you're only wearing one shoe. carry the clubs and make sure the beer's cold. That's
some
all
hockey
I care
sticks
about.
In the bag.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
Exactly. And then from there, the most important part, we need some love. We need you to subscribe to the podcast. We need you to rate 5 stars. How many stars, Nick?
5 stars.
5 stars only.
Nothing but.
Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell anybody you know that likes golf, because this is the podcast you want to be listening to. All right, Scotty, I think it's time to wrap it up. I hope everybody enjoyed the interview with Brad Faxon, and we'll be back next week with our full Masters preview show. It's going to be a good one, I promise you that. Any final words, Scotty?
All good. Looking forward to Augusta.
Looking forward to Augusta. See you next week.